I knew from when I was real small that people were going to know who I was. I always had that feeling. But I just never knew how they were going to learn. And I kind of enjoy it because now, even after I die, people are going to remember me forever. They're going to talk about me for years. People in West Memphis will tell their kids' stories. It'll be like, sort of like I'm the West Memphis boogeyman. Little kids will be looking under their bed before they go to bed. Damien might be under there.
If I had the opportunity to speak to Damien Eccles, I would tell him that I hope he busts hell wide open. Period. And that if I could get my hands on him, I would eat the skin off of his face.
Lost, the child murders at Robin Hood Hills. This film tells the tale of three teens who wore black, listened to Metallica, and, perhaps as a result, were convicted in the 1993 killing of three young boys.
Two filmmakers with incredible access spent almost a year in West Memphis documenting the trial and the town.
Everybody in the town and in the courtroom and on the jury are all blinded by their fantasies about satanic cults.
The criminal confessions are too many manipulated by the police.
I'd be wondering if the true killers were actually captured.
The reason I had made the West Memphis Boogeyman comment during the first film was because I was making light of the situation. I was joking. I didn't realize that. I didn't even comprehend that the situation could get this serious, that it could actually go this far. Because I was thinking, if you haven't done anything, then they can't prove that you did something you haven't actually done. That didn't make sense to me. Now I see they can. You know, I wasn't even thinking about it whenever I said it. A spur-of-the-moment thing. But a lot of people, it seems, didn't take it that way.
You're not gonna be no boogeyman in West Memphis, because you're gonna be dead in hell.
You're watching KATV Channel 7, The Spirit of Arkansas.
Today marks the five-year anniversary of a West Memphis murder case that gained national attention. The bodies of three second graders, Stephen Branch, Christopher Byers, and Michael Moore, were found mutilated in a ditch. Now, one of the three men convicted for the murders, Damien Eccles, has prompted a hearing to try to get his conviction thrown out. Norris.
That hearing started today in Jonesboro, where the trial also took place. Damien Eccles is trying to avoid being executed by lethal injection. He's claiming he didn't get a fair trial because of misrepresentation by his attorneys.
4 years ago, an Arkansas jury found him guilty of murdering three second graders in a horrific, ritualistic sacrifice. As our senior correspondent Tim Sullivan reports, he wants a new trial and a chance to live.
After a month of investigation, police arrested Eccles and two of his teenage friends, Jesse Miss Kelly and Jason Baldwin. Police theorized the murders had been part of a satanic ritual. In addition to local media, the case attracted a documentary team that produced a film called Paradise Lost for HBO. As a result of the film, a nationwide support group has sprung up to help the young men they call the West Memphis Three.
Know that this case is a travesty. It is a non-case. It is a case where someone is in prison right now because of prejudice.
My son Christopher was the one that Jason Baldwin, Jesse Miskelly, and Damien Eccles murdered on May 5th, 1993, 5 years ago today.
That's all we're really doing is trying to promote the case. You know, we're not experts, we're not lawyers, we're not scientists. You know, we just need to keep this case alive so people will do something.
Where are you from?
Los Angeles.
And where are you from?
I'm from Arkansas, Paris, Arkansas.
Okay. And where are you from?
Akron, Ohio. Mark, how do you feel about the West Memphis 3 support group?
To me, it's like Jeffrey Dahmer fan club, Charles Manson fan club, Ted Bundy. You could name them all. Some people want to come to the rescue of a savage to get maybe their 15 minutes notoriety on TV.
We get emails from all over the world, actually. You know, everybody knows there's doubt about this case, but we just want people to look at it again and maybe question it.
They keep wanting to find someone else to blame to get their three off. That's their job, to take care of who they want, draw suspicion, do their thing. But the world knows who's guilty and who's innocent.
Could you hold that out for me and let me get another job?
I would like to talk about the case. I'm here today because this is a hearing for Damien Echols, the fifth anniversary of the tragic murders, which he was convicted for, but we do not feel there was really sufficient evidence to warrant that conviction.
Yeah, they're guilty. They're guilty as they are, and that's an atrocity. So you'd even want to say, where's the profit going for these T-shirts?
It all goes to raise publicity about the case. Every penny of it goes back into doing that.
Why didn't the profit go to the victims' families? Son of Sam Law says that Echols or none of these three can make any money out of it.
It is going to the victims' families. It is. It's trying to find out who killed these little boys.
They know who kills these three little boys right there.
I don't know it.
They're cold-blooded murderers.
In your opinion, it doesn't add up that way.
In my opinion, and 24 jurors out of the state of Arkansas's opinion. Don't just say my opinion. These T-shirts, they're worth trash, garbage.
That make us suffer are very good teachers. I think my suffering through this whole thing has taught me a very great deal.
I have anger sometimes, but there's no one to direct it towards, you know? So I just really try to stay focused on just going home, letting everybody know that I am innocent, I didn't do this. I don't really understand how they convicted me or got me in here, or really how they just arrested me in the first place, you know. But it happened, and so I just can't really dwell on what's happened. I just gotta work with what's going on now.
When they told me that I was going to spend the rest of my life in prison, at the time I wanted to tell them, you know, look, I don't want to do that. Just might as well just go ahead and kill me right now, because I ain't no way I'm going to spend the rest of my life in prison and miss my family. I just can't do that. But, you know, over the years past and everything, you know, I done got used to it, done adjusted to it and everything, how the system works and all that, you know. I adjusted to it, you know. Basically, you know, it's getting better and better by the day. You know, I just got to adjust to it more often. And it's getting better. But I'm going to make it through it.
My name's Chris Worthington, and I'm from Akron, Ohio.
Deborah Hsu, I'm from Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Kathy Bakken, and I'm from California.
Grove Pashley, Grove Pashley, and I'm from Los Angeles.
Anna Mossick, Annamacek, from right outside Houston, Texas.
I'm Ruth Carter, and I'm from Virginia.
Bill Pritchison, Prichason. New Jersey.
Gregory Fleming from Alexander, Arkansas.
I'm Marcia Ian, MarciaIan, also from New Jersey.
My name is Burke Sauls, and I'm an alcoholic.
No, I'm Burke Sauls, BurkSauls, and I'm from Los Angeles, California.
I'd like it if you could all tell me
why some of you have come from so far. Some, I think, have driven as far as from California, taken vacation time, spent money and so forth, to come to this fairly obscure, in many ways, hearing.
I think I saw Paradise Lost the night it premiered on HBO in August of 96. And it just made me so mad that a modern-day witch trial was being allowed to occur in America. I mean, it's not just the fact that they were making mistakes and getting the wrong people, it looked like, but the fact that people seem to be reaching their decisions, even the jury, because of like things like emotions and prejudice and hysteria and their anger. And they weren't using the reason or common sense, or they weren't really even applying the law. And I just think that's the wrong way for things to happen in America. And I couldn't forget about it and just got angrier. And so finally I decided to look into the case. I wrote Damien and read all I could about it, and finally just kind of stumbled upon other people on the internet who felt like I did about it.
It just made me cry. It really made me cry, because I was thinking, how in the world can they sentence this guy to death with what they have, which is nothing?
When I went to work, you know, and they had caught the people that had done this. My boss at work, she just thought it was great. You know, she was like, "Well, they caught those freaks that killed those kids."
What a relief!
Yeah, well, I mean, those were exact words. They caught those freaks, and I said, "Well, you know, they haven't even done the trial yet. What makes you think they did it?" And she was like, "Well, look at them. Look at the way they dress. Of course they did it." Golly, I better stay in the house then, because it's not safe for me out there then.
I think that's a real typical scenario people go through. They first join the list is that I watched Paradise Lost. I also wore black T-shirts. I was an alienated teenager. And I think that might be the initial attraction that brings people in. But I think what's really important and that brings people together to the point where you travel cross country to come to Jonesboro, Arkansas on your week of vacation are the more important issues, such as justice, such as a corrupt, incompetent police force and justice system working in a vacuum here in Arkansas when nobody's watching. That's why I'm here. I don't want them to think they can operate in the dark, kind of like a mushroom, and grow. No one enjoys sentencing somebody to death. Nobody enjoys having to go through the trial. That's why they call it a trial, I guess, because it is heart-jerking and difficult to deal with. When you read those words imposing the death sentence, I don't know if it was visible, but there was a catch in my throat. I could feel it, and certainly you've had those feelings. It's hard.
All right, gentlemen, if you'd have your client stand, please. All right, Mr. Eccles, the jury, having found you guilty of capital murder, three counts in the death of Michael Moore, Chris Byers, and Steve Branch, you are to be immediately transported to the Arkansas Department of Corrections, where the director or his duly appointed and designated representative will, on the 5th day of May of 1994, will be directed to cause to be administered a continuous intravenous injection of a lethal quantity of an ultra-short-acting barbiturate in combination with a chemical paralytic agent into your body until you are dead.
There's never been a moment that I've ever doubted that we did not arrest the right individuals. Never in my mind. There's never been a doubt. I can go to bed at night and sleep knowing that I did my job and did it well. If there was a doubt in my mind, I would still be on the police department. I'd still be working the case.
This is Detective Brian Reed of the West Memphis Police Department, conducting an investigation for the attempt of triple homicide, case file number 9305-0666. Currently in the office with Jesse Lloyd and Ms. Kelly Jr. What occurred while you were there?
When I was there, I saw Damien hit this homeboy real bad. Then he started screwing him and stuff.
What did he hit him with?
He hit him with his fist and bruised him all up real bad. Jason turned around and hit Steve Branch.
Okay.
He started doing the same thing. Then the other one took off, Michael Moore took off running. So I chased him and grabbed him and held him until they got there and then I left.
Well, I was telling them, you know, I don't know nothing about it. And they just kept on egging it on. Finally, I just said something where they just let me alone. And finally, I told them, you know, I chased them and everything and caught them and brought them back. But none of that happened. You know, you can't kill nobody and don't leave no evidence. You can't do it. You know, I don't care who you are, you cannot do that. You know, there was no blood, no fingerprints, no nothing at the crime scene. You just can't kill nobody like that. I don't care if you're a genius or nothing. You just can't do that.
Inspector Gitchell, let's talk about the things that Jesse told you that are just absolutely incorrect. Now, on page 9 of his statement, Inspector Gitchell, Jesse says that the murders took place around noon. How did you know that was incorrect?
Because the young boys were still in school.
Did at any time when he was telling you these things that you knew were incorrect, did it ever occur to you that what he was telling you was false, his entire story was false?
Jesse simply got confused.
This is a classic example of how police can produce a false confession. They threaten Jesse. They tell him that he knows things that they know he knows. They use the polygraph. They tell him that he's flunked the polygraph when he didn't. They use that to convince him that his situation is hopeless. They upset him enormously by showing him these horrible photographs of these dead children. And then they give him the option of being with the bad guys with the consequences of that, or joining the police. And at this point, all he wants to do is get out from under the pressure. So now all he has to do is agree with what they tell him, and that's how they set it up. Initially, they're going for a false witness statement. But once they have him talking, it's not difficult to get him to agree to things that will make him appear to be a participant in the crime.
Out of the 100 or more people that y'all talked to, are you aware of anybody other than the defendant who told you one of the victims that had their genitals removed and one of them had cuts to the side of the face and there'd been some grabbing of the ears?
There was no one else that mentioned those particular injuries.
Was there any kind of emotional response?
He had tears coming down his eyes.
Had y'all yelled at him or been mean to him or
no,
threatened him or promised him anything? Did any of those things?
None of those things happened whatsoever.
All right.
Well, I was down at prison a couple weeks ago and seeing Jesse. And he tells me that you come down about every Sunday.
Yeah. I try to boost the morale up.
Just hang in there for me. We're doing everything we can. Sometimes it seems that things are kind of progressing at a snail's pace, but that's unfortunately the wheels of justice.
There is no justice.
Well, I got to tell you that I had to ask myself whether I still wanted to be a lawyer, but it just lit a bigger fire under me and then made me want to get up and fight that much more. So.
Well, they didn't let you present your case up there in court. I noticed that.
But we got to have hope. Without hope, we don't have a chance. I made a promise to that kid of yours that I'd never give up the fight, and I don't intend to do that. Maybe the quickest way to get Jesse out of that prison is to catch a killer.
Yeah, well, I think everybody knows who's done it, but ain't nobody say anything.
If you wouldn't mind, can you three, tell us what the genesis of the list and the website and everything, how you came to create it?
I saw the movie. I got an advanced screener because I work for an advertising agency, and we worked on the key art, which is like the movie poster art. So I saw it about 3 or 4 months before it actually aired.
We saw the film together, Kathy and I, and we immediately saw it. Oh gosh, Burke would probably like this. Actually, not like it, but so we handed it over to Burke, and then Burke took a copy of it and watched it. And I think about 4 days later, not only Burke had seen the film, he'd already found a book in a used bookstore on the case, and he called us up and he says, these guys are innocent.
I got on this crusade to find every scrap of information I could, and we got all the documents we could get our hands on, and it became a obsessive type of, like a collector's type thing. When we were each, you know, we'd get another tiny scrap of information, we'd add it to the archive on the web, and we decided to make it public too. We wanted it to not just be in our own little filing cabinets, but we said, let's give this to everybody.
After a while, it became apparent that no one had actually looked at evidence and put together a scenario that made sense. And so we started doing more research about, you know, investigation and homicide and forensics, and we came across a website that actually gave forensic and investigative classes, like criminal profiling and homicide investigation, that kind of thing. So I thought it would help me in understanding the case more if I took these classes. So I just started taking the classes. And in doing so, I read all the articles that Brent Turvey had written. He's the guy that gives the classes through Knowledge Solutions. And I liked his philosophy. It made sense. It was about evidence. You know, it was criminal profiling as it relates to evidence. So I thought, maybe this is what we need. Someone who could take this evidence and tell us what happened. Because that's all we want to know. Guilty or innocent. I just want to know. So I called him up and I started explaining the case. And he just said, stop, you know, get the lawyers, tell them to call me. And so I did. And then, you know, the rest is history.
Hey.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. This is my wife and business partner, Barbara.
Nice to meet you, Barbara.
She's taking my notes today for me.
Great.
So our hands can be free. Thanks a lot.
I thought I would have put you over there by the easel so you could use that.
An assortment of markers here for me.
Now, I want to really thank you for agreeing to meet me here and talk about this. You know, I've been working on this case for a long time. It's been over 4 years. And when I got the email from Kathy at the support fund, for the first time in a long time, I got to see a ray of hope for some justice and maybe having this thing analyzed. And you don't know how much it means to us. We didn't have a budget to work with. We didn't have access to this kind of information. We tried to get it, but we just couldn't accomplish it. And It's really good to be able to look at this stuff now and analyze it, even if it is 4 years later.
Do you want to go right and look at
sure.
the okay, I brought the crime scene photos. In every other case that I've worked on, the crime scene photos are always these they're like endangered species. You know, you never see them. The actual crime scene photos are kind of spirited away, and what the defense usually gets is nothing, or color photocopies are really bad. In this case, I was very surprised to receive all the actual crime scene photos.
One of the cornerstones of the prosecution's case was that this was a ritualistic, satanic, cult homicide. Do you say anything here from the crime scene characteristics which would be indicative of Satanism or ritualistic homicide by a cult or anything of that nature?
Most certainly not. There's a definite lack of ritual element to this crime. It's very unfocused in terms of the nature of the injuries. It's very much a reactionary type of behavior, not ritual. And these behaviors that we see in this crime take time. So it would not be plausible for a serial killer or a satanic cult group to grab these victims because of the fact that they are going to be missed almost immediately from the moment that they're abducted. And whoever dumped the bodies here knew that this place was here. He knows the area. This is not some place that you can just find being a trucker off the highway. You got to know it's here. You got to be able to walk in, dump the bodies, and walk out. You got to know that this is available. It's very clear to me from the evidence that, and we can get into that later, that the offender did know the victims.
Hello.
This is the MCI operator.
I have a collect call from
Damien,
who is in an Arkansas correctional facility. All calls other than properly placed attorney calls will be monitored and recorded.
All right.
Am I on speakerphone?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Oh. All right.
So there's like about 15 people saying hello right now.
Hello, Damien. It's good.
Hello, Gro.
Everybody's saying hello now. Hi, hello, hello, hi.
How many of them is it on there now?
25. I just put in the call for questions on the discussion group.
Okay.
Beastie wants to know, I teach at a university and tell my students about your case. What would you most like them to know about you?
That I am neither a freak nor a monster. That I was basically a victim of circumstance, that anyone could have end up in the same situation that I'm in.
Does the reality of being executed ever bother you? Like, do you ever think that's going to happen?
I guess, yeah. It bothers me sometimes. It doesn't bother me in the area of like, being afraid to die. What bothers me is leaving so much left undone. And that us three being behind bars, or even sentenced to death, or being in prison for the rest of our lives, that is not going to in any way bring about justice, because we didn't kill those children. I think it's pretty sad that society can evolve to the stage that it has, yet still be barbaric enough that it puts innocent people like myself, Jason Baldwin, and even Jesse Miskelly in prison and can even sentence you to death while the real killer still walks the streets.
You know, here's where I live today, number 11, an apartment somewhere in the state of Arkansas. That's good enough. I came from a real nice big home with all the amenities and luxuries that you could have to what I like to call my humble, modest studio apartment, a giant 300 square feet, a bedroom, a living room, a kitchen, and a bathroom. But there's benefits to it. It takes me 5 minutes to vacuum, 5 minutes for the air conditioner to cool the place down, and I don't have to walk far to go to the bathroom. So it's a good little spot to live, to be by yourself, to control your thoughts, your emotions, and to live the rest of my life as God sees fit. As I look at all these dark clouds roaming in on me today, it can very easily remind me of May 5th, 1993. This half was a bright, sunshiny day. This half became gloom and doom. And as the death and destruction rolled into West Memphis, Arkansas, and consumed three babies' life and killed them, it's kind of like this cloud front is rolling in and cooling off the day and consuming me as I stand here in the wind amidst the storm. And the storm is what I have been in for the last 3 years. But thank God there's a bright side on the other side. I've been down in a lot of low valleys, and people have tried to take me out. But I'm still here. Jesse, Jason, Damien, those names ring in my ears daily. And I still hate you. Forever and a day shall I still hate you.
Byers, when he's running around cussing me and telling me that I should go to hell and stuff, seems like he's play acting, you know, trying to divert the attention, trying to play the role that he should be of an angered parent, when really, I believe he's the one that did it.
The murders of three West Memphis boys last year shocked all of Region 8. During the trials earlier this year, we empathized with the parents and relatives of those little boys.
And because of television, we were able to see and hear the emotions those parents were going through. Now the parents of one of the boys find themselves once again under public scrutiny. Jenna?
Since the trials, the Byers moved from West Memphis to Cherokee Village. Now, they say they wanted to start a new life, but now they face criminal charges.
They're accused of taking $20,000 worth of property from a neighbor's house. Police have witnesses, who claim they saw the buyers loading stolen items into their pickup truck, and when police searched the buyer's house, they found a few of them.
Mark and Melissa Byers face additional charges in their old hometown. West Memphis police have 13 warrants for the buyers for allegedly writing over $700 in bad checks. The buyers also face other charges.
When they moved to Cherokee Village, the buyers became good friends with their neighbors, John and Donna Kingsbury. Problems began when Mark spanked the Kingsbury's 5-year-old.
I took the glass water and I just, on the, just the plastic end, just on the back of his blue jeans. And I said, now you get home, you've been a bad boy.
But the Kingsbury's say the whipping bruised their son.
We did have to have a restraining order put on them, because I was worried about my family.
Mark Byers' problems began in July. He's been charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Police say he stood by holding a gun and allowed a teenaged friend to assault John Shaver Jr. According to a police report, the teenager used a closed pocket knife in his fist to assault Shaver. The fight sent Shaver to the hospital with a concussion. Byers admits the knife was his. He also admits there was a gun in his car. The Shavers say Byers used the gun to prevent bystanders from stopping the fight.
I think I'd be extremely...
Shavers' father believes this raises serious questions about Byers.
You know, there's a lot of people that's talked to me about it, which I hate to say it, but they think maybe he might have had something to do with those murders.
Mark Byers says that's ridiculous. But these charges and the questions they dredge up may stick with this family forever.
People are placing a lot of emphasis on Mark, and could he have been a suspect? And there again, it's the same question that was asked to me. Did we pick Damien up because he looked weird? Well, are we accusing Mark Byers because he has a ponytail and looks a little weird, and he's a big kind of guy, and is kind of boisterous? I mean, is that why he's labeled as having something to do with it? No. You have to look at the facts, and the facts are the three that we arrested and that have been convicted are the ones that did this. Mark Byers didn't have anything to do with this crime at all.
Who did you receive this knife from?
I received it from, how did I actually receive it?
Who did you receive the knife from?
I received it from Joe and the people with HBO Productions.
Here, this red area here, this is the shaft of the penis. And here is where the scrotal sac and testes should be, and they're missing. So what we have is that the skin overlying the penis, the head of the penis, has been carved off. It's gone. It's not there.
You can see this is probably the single worst case of sexual mutilation I've seen. So this stab wound right here, this one right here, it's a nice elliptical shape there. Nice stab wound right there. See those little sort of abrasions that come along the top there and off the side there?
Mm-hmm.
Those indicate movement. Now that is either the person stabbing the knife in and twisting it, or the person who's being stabbed is moving. And a lot of them at all kinds of funny angles. Meaning to me that the kid was moving around.
Dr. Peretti testified at Miss Kelly's trial in Corning that this could have been done with a knife, or it could have been done with a sharp piece of glass. 2 weeks later, he testifies that this someone is someone who has a great deal of knowledge of anatomy, and that the penis is skinned meticulously, which would take
right.
a great deal of time under laboratory conditions. What can you tell me about that?
On really close examination, this is why I brought you the magnifying glass, because I want you to look right here. You can see the impression of the handle of the knife as it is being plunged See that little squareness right there?
Mm-hmm.
And so whoever did this went like this and grabbed it and just went like that. And that's how they cut it out. No precision, no accuracy, no skill required to do that. And it, actually, to me, it's consistent with what is a fishing knife that's got the blade on one side and the serrated top on the other. Because of the movement involved and because of the depth, that right there is something that only somebody who's like really angry is going to do. This is not an act of deliberation or an act of that's well thought out or well planned.
Is it an act of sexual gratification?
I don't believe so. I believe it's an act of anger.
Byers, I need to ask you about Defense Exhibit Number E6, this particular folding lock blade Kershaw knife. If I could approach the witness, Your Honor.
Yes.
On January the 26th, did Gitchell tell you, let me explain a problem we had, and you need to answer this for me, we have found blood on this knife?
I don't remember if he said there was or not.
Did you have any idea how human blood was on that knife?
Well, yes, I would have an idea. I cut my thumb.
All right. You recall stating, I have no idea how it could have any human blood on it. Do you recall giving that answer?
Yes, sir.
Then do you recall stating, I don't even remember nicking myself with it, cutting the deer meat or anything. Is that the answer you gave?
Yes, sir.
And is that the truth?
I might not have remembered it at that time when he was questioning me, but I could have remembered it later on in the day and talked to him about it.
Okay.
Mark Byers, everywhere he goes, trouble follows him.
Well, didn't him and his wife break in his house and get these statues and all this stuff?
Yeah, and then they just got slapped on the wrist. And he can get into as much trouble as he wants to get into, and they just never do anything to him.
And he's apparently not that great of a person, because from hearing people talk about places that he wants to live or houses that he wants to get, the neighborhood freaks out and they don't want him living there.
I tell you what really worries me about Mark Byers is he's got a thing for knives, like the knife he gave to HBO. And then later on, he gives a teenage boy a knife. If you had a child that was brutally murdered by a knife, you wouldn't be giving another kid a knife to fight another kid and then hold a gun on him and make him do it. I mean...
Well, I wouldn't go far enough to say that Mark Byers murdered these little boys, but I think he had something to do with it. And I just can't figure out what. And I think there's a lot of people that probably do know.
I had 3 or 4 people come to my house to look me up to tell me that they believed that my son was innocent and that they personally knew Mark Byers and that they believed that he was capable of doing a crime like that. And they said they had been to the police, but the police wouldn't listen.
And I feel really bad about what happened to Melissa Byers, because it concerns me that maybe she found out something that she shouldn't have. And I'd like to know what really happened to her.
Wish you could have been here to hear me sing lightly. He liked to hear me sing, didn't he?
I think his little Christmas tree will stay there real well. It's in there tight enough. I don't think the wind will blow it over or anything.
Come here and kneel down here by me. Oh, God, why did you let this happen? Please help us through it. God, please help us through this.
how you love red roses, baby. This is all I can do for you. I know your heart was broken. I know you couldn't stand the death of your child. But oh God, I wish you hadn't left me. You remember when we were on our honeymoon? How happy we were. We worked together. We ate together. We went everywhere together. We weren't husband and wife. We were best friends. I loved you with all my heart. You remember when we opened our jewelry store? We finally accomplished something. Had two sons doing good. Nice house. Nice business. Two dogs and a cat. Just an average family. Trying to live our lives the best we could. I can never put into words how much I loved you. You were everything to me. You were my life. I lived to see you smile. Those animals killed you. They're evil animals, and they killed you, and I blame them for your death. And all for you morons, infidels, and fools that think I had anything to do with it. Go to hell! Go to hell! I love my wife more than any man could love his wife on the face of the earth. I'd have died for her. I took care of her. She was my life. I didn't do anything but love her. And for all you sick son of a bitches out there that think I had anything to do with her life, go to hell! Go to hell. Think what you might. But you can kiss my ass.
I can't understand why exactly people are glossing over the obvious when it comes to Byers and the death of Melissa Byers and all the things that Byers has said and done since this trial. I think maybe for the general public, it's not quite as scary to believe that bloodthirsty Satanists were out murdering children as it is to believe that parents are actually murdering their own children.
Now, you're aware that you're here to take a polygraph test today.
Yes.
And this is concerning the deaths of three boys.
Yes.
At West Memphis in 1993.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You're also aware that this a record, an audio and video record, is being made of this procedure.
Correct, sir.
Do you have any problem with that?
No, sir.
If you do, I want to know about it now because I don't want anything bothering you.
I don't have any problem.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Mark, what we're going to do today... We're going to talk about what happened in West Memphis. We're going to talk about you, where you come from, who you are.
Okay, sir.
What's your name? Full name?
John Mark Byers.
B-Y-E-R-S.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What about your relationship with Christopher?
Oh, he is my best buddy.
And did you all have disputes like your father and son have, I'm sure?
Well, in the beginning, of course, he was little, but when he got up 4 or 5, he started having behavior problems.
Mm-hmm.
And Melissa didn't know what was wrong with him. I didn't know what was wrong with him. In hindsight, now I can look back and say, boy, if I'd known that, I'd have never spanked him, or I'd never given him time out, or I wouldn't have done anything like that.
So you spanked him. What was your intent when you spanked him? Was it your intent to hurt him?
Oh, no, sir.
To discipline him?
Discipline.
Did you ever hurt him?
No, sir.
Son, I know there's thousands of eyes watching what I'm going to do. I know I made mistakes. I'm not a perfect father, but I know I loved you with all my heart. And I know I tried to keep you from getting hurt. I know the times I had to spank you or punish you. It was because I loved you, son. I loved you, and I didn't want anything terrible to happen to you.
With your knowledge of the amount of blood that was lost from not only Chris Byers, but these other boys who have some pretty... They're going to bleed as well, won't they?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Do you have an opinion as to whether or not you could clean up that amount of blood at a sink in the dark? Do you have an opinion as to that?
I think it would be quite difficult to do, to have injuries of this nature without having any blood. I mean, that's... I would question that about the blood.
One of the bodies was discovered in this area right here. There's a place up there on the hill where those two trees grow together right there. Mm-hmm. That was one of the other reference points on the crime scene diagram. The prosecution, their theory was that the murders occurred here in the creek bank. And that actually the homicides took place here on this little kind of plateau area, and that the defendants threw water up on the bank and washed all the blood away. The water was about this high.
And the water, and the theory being that the water, it would hit the bodies and wash the blood back into the river
and wash away the evidence.
Okay, I'm not sure exactly how that would work. Or why they would think it would work.
Unless they had someone throwing water at the same time
You could use a garden hose on the bodies and you wouldn't get all the blood away. I mean, that's like, there would have been so much blood, the amount of blood at this crime scene, if this had been the place where Chris Byers alone was emasculated, there would have been so much more blood than that. And plus, they wouldn't have been able to see it. There would have been an incomplete job. So this is only a disposal site. Two of the kids did die here because they were put in the water and they drowned, but this is a disposal site only, not a primary crime scene.
I'd have to say that the making of the film Paradise Lost was a new situation for the court, and I'm sure for all the lawyers involved. I think I had indicated to the producers earlier that if either the defense or the prosecution had objected, there wouldn't have been any filming in the courtroom. But if I had the decision to do over again as to whether a documentary was made, I probably would not allow it.
Damn.
Well, Beth, right now the new attorneys, the appellate attorneys for Damien Echols, are conducting a hearing inside this courtroom. They have on the stand a lawyer who represented one of Echols' co-defendants at trial a few years ago. What they're trying to do is establish that the trial lawyers in this case who represented Damien Echols were ineffective, that they were incompetent. The main argument is that they had a conflict of interest because they agreed to cooperate with filmmakers who were making a documentary about the case, an award-winning documentary called Paradise Lost that was produced by HBO. The argument these attorneys are going to make is that because Damien Echols' trial lawyers made an agreement to cooperate with those filmmakers, and the allegation is that they accepted money from those filmmakers, that created a conflict of interest which made them incompetent and ineffective to assist Damian Echols at trial. We expect that when the prosecutors cross-examine the lawyers who represented Damian Echols, those lawyers will testify that they did not make a deal to take money from the filmmakers, that the agreement was that the filmmakers would provide money for a trust fund for the defendants, that the money did not go to the attorneys, it was not for the attorneys, and it did not create a conflict of interest. That will be the argument the prosecutors are going to draw out to try to make sure this conviction stands up. I think one of the ironies about this motion is that a lot of the lawyers who are involved in it now, Ed Mylett, Barry Scheck, Bob Fogelnest, high-profile lawyers, never would have heard of this case, you know, before the documentary came out.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I'll send you I can send you a copy of the piece we did based
really?
On the interview.
Man, I'd love to have it.
It's basically, you know, we talked about death row, what it's like beyond death row, etc. You know,
was his hair still long then?
Oh, yeah. His
hair was so dandy.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like when he was here last. I guess they wanted to clean him up and make him look presentable. He said that wearing a white shirt. Yeah, he said wearing a white shirt really gave him a headache, so I know it's just killing him sitting in there in the courtroom. He said white was on the good, you know, the good side, and he likes to stay on the dark side.
He didn't say that to me.
When you were going through the treatment that you were going through that led you to file that suit, how'd you finally get to the point where you did file it, talk to the lawyers, etc.?
I don't really even know. I mean, it's, you know, one day you wake up and you figure out what's the worst thing they can do to you. Kill you. You don't sit here on death row anyway. What else are they going to do to me? You don't have anything to lose when you're in a situation like that.
I went to see Damian yesterday, and for the first time in 4 years, I got to touch him. I got to hug him, and it was hard to believe how much he had grown taller. He was at least a head taller than I was.
I can't believe he had grown all that time without even being able to give him a hug.
He's 20-something years old, but he's still my baby, and that's what it felt like when I put my arms around him. And then he sat down. You could tell he was really nervous because he's been out by himself for so long. He was having a really hard time being around people.
I was allowed to visit with Jason after he was sentenced, and it was the first contact visit we had had in a year. It was just, it was thrilling to be able to hug him, but then I had to let him go and go to this horrible place for something he didn't do. When I start thinking about what all they go through in prison, my mind, I just can't handle it. You know, I just start freaking out when I try to start imagining what Jason's life must be like or Damien's life must be like.
I heard a lot of stuff that had happened to Damien, but it's really, really hard to deal with. You're in a position where you can't do anything. And if you stop and think about it very much, some of the things that are done to him, it I think it could make you lose your mind knowing that something like that's being done to your child.
Because what's happened to them in prison is gonna affect them for the rest of their lives.
When they come home, it'll never be like it ever was, because these boys were just children too. Whenever these little boys were murdered, our boys were just children too.
I never knew what hell could be like until these last 4 years. My whole life has changed. lost my home, my job. Nothing seems to matter anymore. It's kind of like that song. I got a song I dedicated to Jason. It's Nothing Else Matters by Metallica. That's my song to him because really I feel like most of the time nothing else matters to me but getting Jason home. And I just don't know how I do it.
Damien, when our visiting time's over, he always stands up and puts his hand against the glass for me to put mine against his. We're not actually touching, but we are. It's in the heart anyway.
If you could speak to the families of these kids who think you did it, you know, what would you say to them?
If I could talk to the families of the victims right now, I don't know really what I'd say. They were led to believe by the police that we'd done it, so I understand that they hate us, you know, hate me. But I didn't do it, you know. I didn't have anything to do with it. I'm sorry that your kids are dead. I'm sorry about that. I'm really sorry about all that, because I don't have a kid, but if it was like my little brother, I'd be real angry at whoever done it. All I ask is y'all go back and look at the evidence. Just stop and think, and don't let your emotions about it all get to your head, and just stop and think and look back at the evidence and look where the evidence does point and ask yourself, now who do you think really done it? You know, because it's a great tragedy that kids was killed, but it's also another great tragedy that American citizens, anybody, today's public, can just be picked up for a crime they didn't commit and be convicted of it without no evidence. That's another tragedy.
In this particular case, you have the fortune of having what appears to be bite mark evidence right there in the face that was not originally mentioned, documented, or what have you, but these type of bite marks are... There are two kinds.
You're talking about bite marks on the outside of
this
victim's face, not superficial.
No.
Bite marks on the inside of the mouth caused by their own teeth.
Not superficial on the inside caused by their own teeth. There are what appears to be bite marks all over certain parts of these children's bodies.
Well, did he miss that? Or did he... I don't remember.
Not in the autopsy report. And the great thing about bite mark evidence is bite mark evidence is like... It's just as good as a fingerprint, and it's better than DNA, because bite mark evidence indicates a specific person committing a specific behavior. The bite mark indicates that you bit somebody at a certain spot, a certain time. So if we have somebody biting this individual here, a certain person, we have a specific behavior tied to a specific person. So that's the best kind of evidence, as far as I'm concerned, for this type of crime. Whenever you have teeth mark, it's typically... If you were to show this to an emergency room pathologist who'd seen a lot of these, he would arrest the mom, because it's more typically resembling the type that's involved in the cases of child abuse.
We have a mother of a victim who is no longer alive.
Right.
Melissa Byers has been dead since March of 96. I don't see any reason why her autopsy should still be being sealed. They claim they're still conducting a criminal investigation, but... You know, how long does it take to...
Again, in this particular case, since what you've told me is that the death is undetermined, they can keep it open as long as they want. But the problem is, if they're keeping it open, that means they don't know whether it's a suicide or a homicide. And that means it's undetermined, which means it's an equivocal death. But it's important to this case, and the reason I originally asked you for the materials is because I'd like to know if there's a connection. I'd like to see her wounds. I'd like to see if there's any wounds on her. I'd like to see if there's a connection between this case... and that case, and The reality is, I would like also if you get a forensic odontologist in here at any point in time, they can yank her teeth and see if they match any of the bite mark impressions, because we need to at least, if there's nothing wrong, if there's no connection, we need to establish that there's no connection to these deaths.
I've wondered, you know, why it's been almost 2 years and I have called everybody they've told me to call about getting a death certificate or an autopsy report on my wife, and they won't release it. Newspaper people have called, they won't release it. They won't say it's still pending. What's still pending? If they can't say cause of death wasn't anything but a heart attack, all they have said was a prescription medication that she was taking was found in her bloodstream and a foreign drug. They never would release what the foreign drug was. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what caused her to die. They won't tell me. And I think that just gives people suspicion. The police up there, they didn't care about us. They didn't care about her dying. And they still throwing gas on the fire, because if there ain't nothing to hide, why won't they give me the paperwork that I'm entitled to?
Is that or bring charges against you, one or the other?
They ain't got no charges to bring against me because I didn't do nothing.
I know that. I ain't got a doubt in my mind on that. But that's like you said, that's not the point. 2 years and they won't release it. They're just holding it open so people can sit out here and draw their own conclusions and tell it like they want it to go. Because people would rather talk any day of the week about somebody else than sit and talk about their own problem.
I mean, what do you think it makes me feel like when I hear people say, oh, I believe you killed Christopher. I believe you had something to do with killing Melissa. I can tell you how it hurts. Man, it tears me apart. And going to a grocery store, go anywhere, I'm subject to walking into a fool and say that. Y'all been with me when people walk up and say, don't I know you?
Yeah.
Wasn't you the baby killer on TV?
Yeah.
Well, I've been in two fights myself over it.
What was it?
Because, well, in a bar one night there in Mark Creed, dude come up and said, yeah, sorry, Mark Byers. Now, hell, they didn't, them boys didn't kill his kid. He was in on that. He was probably the ringleader on it. Excuse my friends, but I stomped his ass right there on the spot.
Well, you know, I've had an ignorant woman. She was a school teacher there in West Memphis. Taught Jesse Muskelly in his GED, you know, his alternative school.
Yeah.
And this woman showed the movie Paradise Lost and talked about how that I was basically guilty for it and that the police and everything framed them three and there was no cult and Jesse Muskelly was a good loving boy and just such a kind person. Those three animals took my baby from me and they took my wife from me. And I self-destructed. And, buddy, I'm telling you about, I got downright mean. The pain they caused me, it cost me physically and mentally and all the fights and all that I got into because I went to looking for them and the bricks that hit me in the head and the knives that cut these scars on my face and the jerks that had the privilege of knocking teeth out of my mouth. Well, that's caused them three animals that provoked me so to get into a violent rage like I had. And that's what it cost me, a whole set of teeth. But that's all right, because they're going to pay for it. And I can't imagine why people want to say the things they say about me. I mean, what do y'all think? Why in the hell do people want to try to accuse me of being involved in that?
You've always been an out front person. You've been a leader.
Well, I wasn't no mean individual or, you know, call.
Well, no, but you could have been. I mean, you could be mean when it mean. When mean gets mean, you can get mean. You've always been that way.
People just don't know you is the only reason they're talking like they are about you, because if they knew anything about you, they wouldn't be saying that.
And I can't tell y'all how much I love you, you know, for being closer than a brother, but always being there for me.
I've been there, and I'm going to be there, and I'll be there till hell for
you. If you wasn't worthy of it, it wouldn't be there.
You ain't giving me nothing for nothing, are you?
No, sir.
Ain't nothing for free, is it?
Uh-uh.
Have I paid my dues?
Yes, sir. You sure have.
You're damn right.
You damn right.
And the world needs to know about it, don't they?
They sure do.
They need to know the truth, and that's what we're sitting here talking about is the truth.
That's right.
And the devil-worshipping son of a bitches are the murderers out there, not the victims.
There it is.
And there's three families as victims.
And I'd just like to catch those three. If you ever get within arm's reach of this arm right here, you a paid for son of a bitch. You got my word on it.
Marion, how much
favorable ruling.
Why is it so important for you to be here for your son to see you in the courtroom?
There's no reason for them to be here. They were falsely accused. The West Memphis Police Department did a botched job just to get these boys arrested. Somebody had to be arrested. It's ridiculous.
Do you feel like the HBO film affected this case?
I think it helped a lot.
I think it helped.
Yes, I do.
It helped your son?
Yes, I think so.
Why is that?
I just think that it shows enough on both sides to where you can kind of see a personal side of Damien.
Do you feel like that his attorneys, that his former attorney did not do an adequate job?
Well, from what I'm seeing, it looked like he didn't.
What is the personal side of Damien? You know him better than anyone.
He's very much like myself. He usually keeps to himself and doesn't really ever bother anyone. We're both very private.
So what do you hope happens in this front set?
I hope everyone can see this for the joke that it really is.
Five seconds. 3:30, Tim. 3:30. 2 seconds.
Daniel Stidham. He defended one of the three individuals convicted in this case, Jesse Miss Kelly.
Thank you for being with us. All right, Damien Eccles.
He received money which was supposed to aid in his defense. How does this
harm his trial, his right to a fair trial?
In my opinion, Greg, it didn't. I personally don't subscribe to that point of view.
Interesting. Let me turn now to Ray Brown.
He was a veteran criminal defense attorney and our colleague here at Core TV. Is there a conflict of interest here, Mr. Stidham, who was involved in it?
He himself doesn't think so. Let's get to the real question, Greg, which is...
That because this country is in many areas so strongly in favor of death penalty, that we underfund the defense.
I think Mr. Stidham can tell you that he earns something like $19 an hour for his representation of his client. The lawyers for Eccles got a little bit more.
But nowhere near the money needed, and $1,000 limit on money for experts in a case that is fairly saturated with scientific proof. So this is the kind of case in which we have to look at the question whether the defendants were given a war chest, because it's really the argument of the defense here that in fact the lawyers for Eccles were forced to make some kind of an agreement that involved letting their clients' conversations be overheard because they didn't have the resources to fight the case.
Not something to be lightly tossed away or endangered. Daniel Stidham.
If you had a lot of money, what would you have done with it?
Well, we would do some of the things that we're doing right now with regard to the forensic evidence.
All right, Dan Stidham, anybody who defends somebody in a capital death penalty case, I take my hat off to you. You're deserving of many thanks for that, regardless of the circumstances, guilt or innocence. And thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
How can the medical examiner, when he conducts an autopsy, how can he miss a bite mark on the victim's face?
The reality is, with any kind of physical evidence, with any kind of physical imprint of evidence like that, or compressions or pattern injuries like that, you have to really be trained to look for them. If you're not looking for it, you're not going to find it. And in this particular case, you have a preponderance of bite mark evidence that seems very good, and you're likely to get a very good result off of. Bite mark evidence is the kind of evidence that got Bundy, and that's the kind of evidence that's going to get the individual who's responsible for these crimes. We really have to be careful to protect the information that we have in that report and not disseminate it to individuals who are potentially going to release it. Because in my experience, in cases that I've worked on, when there's an offender who finds out that there's bite mark evidence that's potentially going to be used against them, even in prison, they're going to be making a visit to the prison dentist, and they're going to have those teeth removed because they do not want that evidence linked back to them. They know that bite mark evidence is just as good as a fingerprint in a court of law.
Now, Mark, are you married?
No, sir, I'm widowed. My wife passed away March 29th of 96.
Sorry to hear that. March 29th of 96. Where was this at?
In Cherokee Village.
Cherokee Village, natural death.
Cause of death undeterminable.
What do you... you have any feelings about it, I mean...
Yes, sir.
What are that, if you want to reveal it to me?
My wife had given up her will to live after our baby was murdered, and she just didn't want to live anymore, and she got into an addiction, and I think the addiction helped
drugs.
Kill her. Yes, sir.
What type?
Delilah.
Have you had any other problems with the police?
Not major, no, sir.
You had problems? Is that what you're saying? I don't
know. Oh, well, speeding tickets. I got a DWI one time after my wife was murdered. Nothing really major. No,
no robbery, no
stealing. Oh, no felonies or anything like that.
Okay. From what I see, what you're telling me is you are not a hateful, mean person. You're not the kind of person who goes around causing distress to people. You don't steal. You don't go out of your way to harm people.
No, sir.
Or anything like this.
And
you
much.
Said there was maybe one time ever that you had hurt someone in a fight or something.
Oh, I'm sure. In football games, I hurt people, you know.
Yeah, but you know, football's one thing, but did you go out there meaning to hurt somebody?
Oh, no, I went out there for the sport of the game, you know.
If you do something, I think that kind of comes with the territory.
If you get hurt, it comes with it. Now, if someone intentionally low blocks you or trips you to injure you, that's one thing.
Did you ever do that?
No, sir. I played tight end. I caught the ball and ran.
Did you ever want to hurt somebody?
Yes, sir. There's three people right now I'd like to hurt.
With the exception of those three people.
No, sir.
There were a number of people that looked like good suspects initially, like a phone call would come in and you would start checking on it and it was like, hey, we may have something here. And then you'd find out, well, no, there's no way this person could have done it. So, I mean, it was like I think at the time I referred to it as an emotional roller coaster. You just had ups and downs, and that just wears you out. I know for a period of time, a couple of weeks into the case, maybe 2 to 3 weeks into the case, at that point I was personally feeling like Damien was responsible for this. And I got to the point where I could see him at the doorway of my bedroom. I'm sure a lot of that had to do with just being exhausted physically, mentally, and no sleep. But just really, really even becoming a little paranoid and terrified myself.
I think Gary Gitchell has an overactive imagination. I believe deep in his heart that he knows that we did not commit those murders, but now it's too late for him to come forward and say that, to say he made a mistake at this point in time. I mean, that would, it's just something he can't do now. So I think he's kind of been playing this part for so long that now he probably believes this part he's been playing himself. He's fooled himself into thinking it's true.
Okay, here's the question. Bill says, what did you think of Paradise Lost? And your haircut then?
That haircut was actually given to me about 5 minutes before the hearing by a woman in the back room with a pair of plastic scissors. I was not to blame for that haircut. As for the movie itself, it was very emotional for me. I think I went through the entire range of emotions while I was watching it. I think it made me a little homesick.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it weird to see Jason again?
Yeah. He didn't even look like I remembered. I guess because so many years have gone by that I had begun to forget what he looked like until I saw him on there. And, I mean, when I was looking at that, we were both children. We were still kids. The entire way that I carried myself back then, my entire demeanor back then, as compared to now, I think I've changed a very great deal.
Did you feel roped into doing Paradise Lost, forced into it, or did you
No, I wanted to do it. You know, at the time we needed some kind of positive publicity, or at least some way, some kind of forum to express what I wanted to say to kind of combat just what the prosecution was releasing to the media, some kind of objective thing where I could actually express something, but I also did it because I just thought it would be fun.
So you trusted the filmmakers pretty much to do a fair portrayal of what was going on?
Yeah, I trusted them, but at the same time, even if I didn't, what did I have to lose?
What did you think of Byers?
I think Byers is probably the fakest creature to ever walk on two legs. I don't think there's a true thing about him. He puts on all these false faces. He'll act one way whenever they have cameras on him, and another way when he's by himself. And he has about 30 different faces.
So seeing him in the movie didn't change how, you know, any of your opinions about him.
Well, I think it reinforced the opinions that I have about him. I still believe with all my heart that he is the person who killed those three children. And I have no sympathy for Byers. I'm sitting here on death row for a crime that he committed. That in itself is enough to make me have no sympathy for him, but then also the fact that he killed three little kids.
Do you think Melissa had anything to do with it?
I don't think she actually participated in the act of killing them, but I think she participated in covering it up. I firmly believe that she knew, and I think that's why she's dead now.
If you could give Byers a message, what would it be?
I wouldn't say anything to Mark Byers. Mark Byers is beneath me. He doesn't even deserve my contempt.
Butchered my babies out here. I swore I'd stand at your grave and cuss it. Well, I'm doing it a little bit early. I'm gonna bury you three bastards right here and send you to hell. This crime scene tape had come off what they stretched in front of me when they found my babies out here. Wouldn't let me by. I thought it was just fitting to bring it back to your memorial fund. Jesse, you got your flyers. That's your head marker, you animal. To Damien. Jason, there's yours. You want to worship the devil? Same, I'm going to give you a farewell party. Now we're going to have some fun. I'm going to try to help send you on your way. You done got all my blessings, which aren't none. What do you think? You ready to die? Fire for fire. Death for death. Live through this fire, you animal. What, ain't hot enough for you? did that you killed the man. Do you remember? You want to eat my baby's testicles? Burn, you son of a bitch. Burn. Burn, go to hell. Burn. Can you remember screaming and hearing them holler? Stomp on your grave. Stomp on your grave. Stomp on your grave. Burn and go to hell. Burn like you deserve to burn.
Young people involved in the occult, do you see any particular type of dress?
I have personally observed people wearing black fingernails, having their hair painted black, wearing black t-shirts. Sometimes they will tattoo themselves.
Look at history. Look at hundreds of years of religious history. There have been hundreds of people killed in the name of religion. It is a motivating force. It gives people who want to do evil, want to commit murders, a reason to do what they're doing.
Las Vegas is pretty much like second Salem right now. Because everything that happens there, every crime, no matter what it is, it's blamed on Satanism.
This case has attracted a lot of young people that relate to Damien.
Yep.
And it scared the hell out of them, so that's why they want to be there. And yet, you got to tell them, if they dress in black, man, that's not going to help Damien at all, because it's just going to look like Damien has a cult following.
We dressed in suits, and they still thought we were in a cult. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if we get people at the hearing that insist on dressing in all their goth glory, then it's just going to confirm everything that they think, that there's still a cult, that, you know, Damien's still controlling the cult from prison. I mean, people are telling me that stuff. I mean, reporters.
Well, I was asked by a reporter if I was a member of Damien's cult.
Me too.
And I'm standing there wearing a suit. I thought I was dressed like a guy, like a normal person, you know. But the I think what we were trying to do is we don't want to give them any fuel for that.
I think they're so afraid if they dress conservative, they're going to be on the other side, the enemy side. Like, they have to dress like Damien or something if they want to be on his side.
Right.
I don't know what that is.
Well, look how he dresses now in court. You know, he wears all white in prison.
Yeah.
And when he goes to court, he's wearing, you know, like, nice clothes. I mean, he's grown up a lot.
Yeah, a lot of people only know Damien from the movie, so they see these little bits of Damien in the movie, and that's what they think they're reacting to, but they don't realize that's, like, 5 years ago.
I want to remind you, this is a fundraiser, so I want you to give from your heart, because these young men are kind of counting on us. And just for the record, anyone, if you know someone that hasn't been able to make it here today or for whatever reason left early, if you'll remind them, this cauldron's going to be available for the next couple weeks to continue to add to. So,
I'm putting money in here because I want Damien to be able to go to college outside of prison.
Hey,
I want him to go to a real school.
Really soon. And remember, too, that he had the courage to say he was Wiccan in adversity when he knew that it would cost him a lot.
All of us who are here because we enjoy knowing that there is religious freedom, hopefully somewhere,
yeah,
that we all respect each other for our beliefs, for our loves, for everything that we have.
They wrote it off as something, well, we don't understand that. It's got to be the work of the devil. Well, you know, Wiccans don't believe in the devil, okay? The devil is a Christian deity. They use the devil, or they believe that the devil is something that causes them to do evil things. And in the Wiccan read, in the Wiccan tradition, those folks believe that you are 100% responsible for your actions. And they believe in the law of three. whatever you do comes back on you threefold. If you put out good energy, that's coming back to you threefold. If you put out negative energy and dark energy, that's coming back on you threefold. That is what the Wiccan means. I know that as a Wiccan, that every religion is important to me. And if I felt like even Christians, that they weren't having their right to be, you know, they couldn't practice in their way, I would defend that. It's not about just me being Wiccan. This is about how did this affect three little boys whose murderers I personally believe were unfounded. And there's three young men who are in jail, and one of them's there, and he's on death row just because he said, I'm Wiccan.
Could you explain to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury what some principles about the Wicca religion?
It acknowledges a goddess in a higher regard as a god, because people have always said we are all God's children, and men cannot have children. It's basically like a close involvement with nature.
Okay, here's the question. Well, I was wondering what made you go change your religion back to Catholic.
I haven't changed my religion to anything. At this point in time, I don't really make any distinctions between religions anymore.
And they say that a lot of people in prison find God.
Well, I never knew God was lost. And I don't like to put a label over myself anymore.
Did you ever?
Well, at one time I didn't really mind, because I thought maybe there was some sort of distinction between religions, but then I realized that there's not. I think all religions basically teach...
The time limit is about to be exceeded. Your call will be terminated in 30 seconds.
I think all religions basically teach the same message, and I think it's the people who create all these dogmas and strict rules and try to enforce this belief that if you don't believe it the way they do, that you're going to suffer.
Have you forgotten this face? I hope not, because it's going to come visit you when you die and look up from hell. It'll be just like Lazarus and the rich man. Lazarus in Abraham's bosom, the rich man looks up from hell. What's he do? Beg for a drop of water. None was given. You'll beg, because my baby shall put his foot across your neck. How do I know that? Well, it's an easy song. The Bible tells me so. And there's so much in here that's in store for you. If you don't have one, rush out to your nearest bookstore and get one, you lowlife. Have the Gideons mail you one. Read it. Live it. Believe it. It is your destiny. Hell awaits you.
Burke's going to talk here.
Come on in.
We got everybody in here?
Who am I telling?
And when?
We have multiple people here.
Well, this... Should I just start talking?
Go ahead.
Okay, this is a collection of postcards that we've received from people from all over the world in support of this cause. They've all written Free the West Memphis 3 all over these postcards.
The goal was actually to deliver this to the governor, show the governor the support that these three have. It's more like kind of working as a petition more than it is anything else. But it's a way for people to express their concerns about this.
Thank you.
You're watching KATV Channel 7, The Spirit of Arkansas. This is Channel 7 News at 6.
Did defense attorney sabotage Damian Echols' case by sitting on potentially explosive evidence? His new attorneys think so.
Edward Millette says the men who represented Echols in his first trial not only botched the case by selling the story to HBO, but they failed to investigate obvious leads.
Millette also claims that he has new evidence of a human bite mark on one of the victims. Judge David Burnett granted his motion to get bite mark impressions from Damien's two co-defendants. Under cross-examination, Val Price, Echols' previous attorney, testified that he did his best to represent Echols. But Brent Turvey, a forensic scientist, disagrees. He says Price sat on critical evidence, namely bite marks he's found on the victims' bodies.
That kind of stuff is like absolute proof of who did this. I mean, they can get bite impressions It's like
a fingerprint.
It's done. Yeah, they can identify who it is, period.
Or we at least exclude these three boys.
Yeah.
That we have no question that they're innocent. So that's one way of trying to prove that.
The three they've got are the three that did it. You are entitled to your opinion, but to spread your propaganda that you believe they are innocent, I think, is crap.
Bite marks aren't propaganda. That's solid 100%
fact,
evidence.
It hasn't been proven they're bite marks yet, though.
It has been. And you're very convinced 100% they're guilty, right? And you're 100% convinced of your own innocence.
No,
so why don't
I'm
you... Why don't you give your bite impressions to the defense?
Do you think that I'm guilty, that I had something to do with murdering my son?
You're not saying anything about that.
I don't know if you had anything to do with it. I want to know that you didn't, and that would be by giving your
rule yourself out for it.
I've already been exonerated. What else do I have to do?
The public's been kind of suspicious of you.
What happened to Melissa?
I believe she died from a broken heart.
You were there, so you saw
I was asleep beside her and woke up and found her passed away beside me. There were no bruises, abrasions, anything like that of any foul play whatsoever. I've been totally exonerated. All charges or suspicion of anything dropped.
Well, I do know there was a toxicology report, and they talked about actually quite a lot of drugs that were in her system.
A lot of prescription drugs that she was taking. Sure did.
Well, also some prescription drugs she wasn't taking.
She took like 7 or 8 different types of medication for being bipolar, manic, depressive, post-traumatic syndrome. As far as the other medication, I'm as puzzled about it as anyone.
I read in the newspaper, it was actually Arkansas Times.
Yes.
Mara Levert said that there were signs she was suffocated.
There were no signs of suffocation or struggle. She was laying right there on the bed when the paramedics and all came in.
Someone published something in the newspaper about me that was suspicious like that. It pointed a finger at me and said I was this and said I was that. I'd want to prove to somebody that I hadn't, that I had nothing to do with.
Tell me what I have not done to prove that I have not been involved in any of it. I have no problem with a polygraph, sodium pentothal, being hypnotized, bite marks, or anything else which I've submitted to every test they have asked, every question they have asked, because I know my innocence.
Did
you
take your bite mark impressions?
I mean, if you're actually dead. Dental records. You know, how could you give your bite impressions if you don't have your teeth? Maybe that's why you're not so reluctant to do it.
What if I told you that the teeth that I had before they were pulled, the teeth that I had during it, I know the oral surgeons and all that did the work, and I would be glad to sign a release for them to send my x-rays.
Will you do that?
If need be. Like I said, I've cooperated with the police.
Do it for Dan Still.
I don't do a damn thing for you.
Do it for Dan Still.
Do it for your kid.
Do it for them. Do it to prove us wrong.
Yeah.
I don't have to prove one damn thing to you.
If it turns out that we're wrong, we'll admit it. I promise you.
Bend over and put your head between your legs and kiss your ass goodbye, because you're going to be wrong. I think y'all are fighting a lost cause.
Just trying to get to the truth.
As a young boy at the age of 13, I started down many of the wrong roads that a lot of teenagers will go down. I remember the first dollar I stole was out of my mama's purse. First people I stole from, my parents. Boy, it just went down a rough and rugged road from there. I can remember quite vividly the day that I came to from a comatose state. I had overdosed in my parents' home. Next day, they were on the phone with my brother-in-law and sister down in Jackson, Mississippi. Said, "Will y'all take him? He's out of control. We can't do anything with him." I saw my brother-in-law, a big, tall, red-headed fella. I said, "You don't know all the wrongs I've done." He said, "Well, let me show you over here." He explained to me about the Apostle Paul. He said, "Don't get up there and think that you're the worst that's been." He said, "The Apostle Paul's already took that privilege." And he says, "I am the chief sinner." So I thought, well, if the Lord could save the Apostle Paul and look beyond his sin, he could save me too. When this last tragedy came into our life, I stood by my son's casket. And I said, "Oh, God, help me. Lord, I'm looking to you. I want to be the dad that stands in the gap, that'll stand for you regardless to what the world says. I don't care. Lord, I can't do this on my own. I need you. And you know, there was a peace that surpassed all understanding that came upon me in that funeral home. And I thought, thank God for that. Thank the Lord for after 20-something years of living like a savage on this earth, that He knocked at my heart's door and spoke to me. And I'm so glad I invited Him in.
I'd want to know who in the community had access to those victims, who would be trusted with those kids. I want to know what the relationships were in that community, because who was killed tells you why they were killed. Look at how clear of a line we're drawing between the homicide and the behavior of Chris Byers. My feeling is that this kid was being abused. Chris Byers was setting fires. He was playing with his own excrement. He was beating up other kids, picking fights. He was on Ritalin. The doctor was saying he was going to hospitalize him. He was a kid who had behavioral problems and problems of being defiant and violent and aggressive and impulsive for at least 3 years that this neurologist had been seeing him. And this doctor in his report states, I'm giving this kid, I've been prescribing him Ritalin for the past 3 years. Nothing's come of it. He even says it does not make sense to me. I'm at a loss to explain why his behavior has not abated. Because what Ritalin is it's a kiddie depressant is what it does. Is it takes kids and makes them more docile. But Ritalin is a funny drug, and it's my understanding, and you have to talk to somebody who really knows what's talking about this, but it's my understanding that in adults, Ritalin is like speed. It has the exact opposite effect.
So you think that maybe the kid wasn't getting the prescription?
Well, if he was getting the prescription, he wouldn't have been exhibiting those behaviors, and he was exhibiting those behaviors. So my only thought would be that he was not getting his prescription.
They had a little book they wrote in at school. I still can't go through a lot of his things. It's still too painful.
It's his journal.
It's his journal. And it was on a Wednesday. And he had written nothing on the page except just, I love my mommy. And that's all he'd written on the page. And I know that if he could come to me, he would say, Mommy, it's okay. And I'm all right. And you need to be all right, too. And I still love you. And I love Daddy, and I love Ryan. Now, I want you to pull yourself together, Mommy, and I want you to go ahead and live. Because I'm okay now. I'm okay. I'm all right. You don't have to worry about me.
What was your relationship with your wife? Did you all get along pretty good?
As long as I could keep her from using, we did. I could keep her off of it a couple months, and she'd go back to it. The first rehab I put her in was 9 months after we were married, and I had a doctor tell me then that y'all just go ahead and divorce her. He said, you know, heroin junkies, one out of, I don't know what the statistics exactly he gave me, he said, ever stay clean. He said, this is going to cause you a lot of pain and misery.
Do you use drugs?
No, sir.
Have you ever used drugs?
Yes, sir.
What?
Marijuana. I've tried coke, some pills.
Do you ever have a habit?
No, sir. Never been
used
drugs.
Just casual experimenting or casual
just experimenting as a teenager and going to college.
Have it. Oh, you have a brain tumor?
Yes, sir.
Is it troubling you now? Have you got it under control?
Well, I'm under doctor's care.
Are you taking medication?
Yes, sir.
What? Is it, well, just tell me what it is. Well, tell me what it is. Tell me what it does. Is it for a nervous condition?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It helps me from my anxiety and panic attacks and the terrible nightmares that I have. When I go to sleep a lot of times.
Have you taken your dosage today?
This one is in the morning. This one's in the evening. This one's in the evening.
This one's three times a day, and this one's three times a day. These Xanax on me works like Ritalin does on children.
What happens when you don't take this?
I'll get real nervous and just like my kind of paranoid feeling. I'll just have panic attacks.
Your doctor said that you had a multitude of psychiatric problems. What does he mean by that? Have you been diagnosed as having a particular, some sort of psychiatric condition that has a name to it that they told you about or anything?
Just from what she said, manic depressive post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Have you ever hallucinated?
Yes, sir, I have. I've seen a bug on the floor or something. That's usually when I'm in a manic or a panic attack. You know, it seems like I'll see things out of the corner of my eye. It's really not there.
Have you ever believed that you might have been involved somehow?
No,
sir. No,
you've
never had any hallucinations or anything dealing with that?
Only nightmares of hearing my son crying for help. I couldn't help him because I didn't know where he was.
Michael Moore was found in this area right here at the bottom of the screen. Steve Branch was found just behind where these trees are in the stream. And Christopher Byers was found just below that body right here.
This is Exhibit 22, which is the body of Michael Moore after removing him from the water. This is the body of Steve Branch. Steve Branch is the man that had the injuries to his face.
Is it a particular part of his face?
On the left side of the chin area. Steve's exhibit 24, the body of Christopher Byers.
And what kind of injuries did Chris Byers have that you observed?
It looked as though his penis had been removed.
When they were describing the injuries to my son, of course I didn't see many of the photos, but just hearing the description, it brought back things that had happened to me in my past when I was tortured and when I was attacked and when I had had five people beat me up and torture me, but I lived through it, and it brought back all those feelings and all those emotions of it happening to me, and it was like they were reading off what happened to me and I lived through it instead of what happened to Christopher, and it was just almost like a mental thing. It just I basically just had a mental breakdown from just, you know, from hearing it. It was like a living nightmare, reliving it all over again. Except it wasn't me that they were reading it about. It was my son.
From my brain tumor. It's been acting up, giving me a lot of problems. I just passed out the other day and busted my head open in the house, blacked out, hit the door facing. It's going to have to be operated on soon.
When are you going to do that?
Probably after Christmas.
Yeah.
Somebody Jones proposed? Is this somebody Jones proposed?
I don't know.
Are they all out from west?
All over the place.
There's about six or eight in Arkansas.
We got Ohio, we got
New Jersey,
Illinois.
California.
I see ignorance spreads real fast.
Hey, why are you being so mean to us now all of a sudden when the cameras are rolling? You're so nice to us when the cameras are off.
I'm not being mean to you. I'm just speaking my mind.
You are two people.
No.
You are.
If you can't,
you were my buddy last time. What happened?
I never said you were my best friend, you know.
Well, you were nice to me at least. Now you're telling me I'm ignorant, idiot, and all that. It's like when the cameras roll, I'm an idiot. When they're not, we're buddies. What's up with that?
Truth hurts, might as well be on film.
Okay, so this is the truth. So when the cameras stop, that's not the truth.
No.
That's the untrue part.
No.
Which one's true?
The way I act around you is one thing.
Two things. Which one's real, though?
Which one you think's real?
I don't know.
Well, I guess it'll stay a mystery then.
Okay.
There's not going to be any need to that. I'll be taking a polygraph very soon. And when that's all cleared, why should I give bite marks?
The bite marks would exclude you. Absolutely.
Bite marks would exclude me anyway. I don't have any teeth.
These are dentures.
The bottom ones are dentures?
Yeah. So you're going to take black marks, two gum prints? Give me a break. They were done before the kids were murdered. Stripes, all that here, yeah.
When did you get your dentures? Because I think I remember on the steps you said that was a little, you said it was after the kids died.
It was right at the end.
You had your dentures right when they died?
No, I've had them since 93 at the start.
Last time you said it was after.
My mistake.
How did you lose your teeth? That's what I've heard. Lost them, but not how?
Because I was taking Tegretol for my epileptic seizures, and Tegretol causes periodontal disease, and they all started rotting and falling, coming out.
Is this fall out? You have to pull?
Yeah, you have periodontal disease. That's when the gums literally move away from your teeth.
It's my understanding that the odontologist has now reviewed bite mark impressions from all three defendants, compared them with the bite mark, which the odontologist has identified, and we can exclude the three defendants who've been convicted as the person who made that bite mark. What's exciting about this is we now know that this kid was bitten by someone, and this someone was not any of the three defendants. And it's just, you know, I wish and pray that this information would have been available to us back at trial. I think the result would have been dramatically different.
This is the interesting thing. Brent Davis, the prosecutor, claims that this is not a bite mark, but as Frank Peretti, who performed the original autopsy, says that this is a bell-shaped pattern abrasion that is consistent with a belt buckle. They're interpreting, looking back at this injury, they're interpreting it, and it's only this is a two-dimensional surface. If we were looking at a three-dimensional surface, we would see that this actually creates a circle because the eye socket curves in and curves under. The two-dimensional photograph makes it look like a bell shape.
Basically, they're going to put on two guys, one of which did the original autopsy and missed this bite mark, and basically state that this isn't a bite mark.
The bottom line here is that this is not legal trickery. This is hard physical evidence of somebody else committing this crime.
For just about every hearing. Can you tell me what your opinion on this?
Well, I think the fact that there's bite marks and they don't match the three is pretty much proof that they didn't do this.
And the big thing now is for the first time in the history of this case, we've got qualified experts involved. It's as simple as that.
And what does he think it will do to his case?
Well, he knows he's going to be out of prison before long. Eventually the truth is going to come out.
Are you going to be here till the end?
Yes. We're going to be here however many times it takes.
Have you been following the case?
No, but I've seen what happened.
You saw what happened?
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Okay, I'm not sure if the three boys done it or not, but the three boys were there. Excuse me. The three boys were there. But there's one more that's running on leash right now, and he lives here in Jonesboro right now.
Who is he?
Mark Byers.
You believe Mark Byers had something to do with it?
He was holding a knife. Well, what more proof do you need? He was holding a knife. The three boys were not holding a knife. Mark Byers was.
And how did you witness this?
I seen it.
Have you told the police what you saw?
Yeah. Well, I've tried to tell police, but nobody wants to listen to me. I've tried to tell prosecutors, they don't want to listen to me.
Why don't they want to listen?
I don't know. I've been in an accident before, you know, and they think I'm all scrambled up. I'm probably signing my death warrant right now. I'm probably doing that right now. But I don't care. That's irrelevant. You can get it somewhere else. I have no more comments.
The guy that you just interviewed over there, that's sensational. He's like that. He's just like Jesse Miss Kelly. He's a guy who's got a story, and you're gonna. I bet. Here's my bet. We're gonna see that on the news tonight.
I don't know what.
And it's gonna be big, groundbreaking revelation confession, and you guys
as
are gonna.
As long as that's not the only thing, Don't preempt everything else to show that.
But I wonder if you're gonna use any footage that you got of Steve Baker, anything that talks about facts or anything that was brought up in court today, any of the news, as opposed to the fiction.
Only one news story that I saw mentioned that the bite mark impressions did not match any of the three boys in jail.
That was the big news yesterday.
And that was the important thing that happened yesterday, and nobody mentioned except for one news report that I saw this morning, added as an afterthought. Oh, and by the way, none of the bite impressions taken match.
I got that afterwards because I couldn't stay here, so I didn't. I added it. I put that at the end of my story. In the first case, did the state bring their own odontologist?
No, there was never mention of bite marks. They wouldn't have brought an odontologist. If they had brought an odontologist, that would have suggested that they knew there were bite marks or some reason to bring one. But there was no, originally, it was either overlooked or ignored, so they had no reason to bring in an odontologist because it wasn't mentioned in the first trial.
Okay. When was that? Someone told me that.
Someone lied to you. Someone, it was probably, you probably saw it on the news.
I don't know. Maybe.
Now live from the Good Neighbor Station, this is KH News at 6.
It was a packed courtroom again as supporters and families of both victims and convicted listened to the last day of testimony. The state called two state medical examiners who testified they did not find any bite marks. However, odontologist Dr. Thomas Davis testified for the defense that in his opinion it was a bite mark. The state called Dr. Harry Mincer, also a forensic odontologist, said that it was not a human bite mark. While the state and defense seesaw back and forth, Damien's supporters remain optimistic.
How you doing?
Fine.
Good. Okay, here's the deal. They're going to talk to me from New York. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be talking to me. We're going to put an earpiece in. You're going to hear Greg Jarrett, who's the host in New York. Yeah, his name is Greg. You can just call him Greg if you want to.
Gotcha.
And when you answer his questions, just look at the camera instead of me.
No problem. I act like I've done it 100 times, right?
You have done it 100 times.
Sure.
You all right?
No, he's fine.
Okay.
All right. Is my son's picture good?
We're joined now by John Mark Byers, adoptive father of the victim, Christopher Byers. Thank you for taking the time with us.
Mr. Byers?
Mr. Byers, do you hear me?
He hadn't said a word.
Obviously, we're having technical difficulties. Mr. Byers, can you hear me? This is New York. Mr. Byers?
I'm not speaking to you.
Can you?
Yeah, I can hear you, Greg. Can you hear him now, Mr. Byers?
No, I cannot.
You're okay, Timmy. Don't worry about your mind. I got you dead.
Can you hear him now?
Then let's get it checked in, and then we'll go for the third block.
Fine.
Does that make sense, Tim?
Yeah, that's fine.
Tim, see, this thing is going.
Okay, Mr. Schultz is going to join us.
Blood and about Timmy, you still got me, right?
Yeah, I got you, Dom.
All right, Mr. Sauls, can you hear me, sir?
Yes.
You can?
Yes.
And Mr. Byers, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Byers joins us again. Hopefully we've solved the technical problem. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
What do you think of Echols and the defense team saying you're the killer?
I have a very good answer for that. I'm 6'8 and weigh 252 pounds. I'm the largest red herring they've ever thrown in a jewelry box. Someone else to take the jury's mind off the three real murderers.
All right, joining us now also is, in Jonesboro, Burke Sauls. He helps run the Free the West Memphis 3 Support Fund.
Do you believe that Mr. Byers is the real killer?
That's not the point of what we're doing here. I'm not here to accuse anyone. That's actually what happened to these three guys.
One of the things that I guess a lot of people can't get over is one of the three defendants, all three were convicted, Jesse, Miss Kelly, confessed. How do you account for that?
Well, to the experts that testified in the trial, it was a forced confession. It was coerced.
What was coercive about it?
For one thing, there was a timeline problem where he stated it happened in, early in the day,
and they led him down to the time that they wanted him to say that it had happened. And he eventually gave them what they wanted.
I want to thank all of you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Coming up next on Primetime Justice, President Clinton's war with independent counsel Ken Starr isn't over yet.
I really appreciate what y'all have done for them.
I think just the fact that we live in Los Angeles, we have maybe some talents that we can probably help this case out somewhat.
I know at the airport yesterday, there was a young guy that walked past us, and he had a black shirt, black pants, black trench coat, yeah, black boots, and I thought, you get in trouble at that for some places.
Yeah, welcome to L.A. Like 50% of people live here dressed like that.
They're like, well, there's a guy wearing all black, there's a woman wearing all black, there's another guy wearing all black. It's a flattering color.
A lot of the reason that Damien wore the black was because someone told him that he was sexy in the black. And then he wore it most of the time.
That's your argument. Yeah. That's your argument. These guys are guilty. It's like, come on, how silly is this? So, of course, you know, it was the media that portrayed these guys at the start. And
I couldn't believe all the... They overwhelmed us from the very beginning when they arrested them and the media attacked them.
See, now it's our turn to use the media to our advantage. Because the first time around, there was no critical thinking. They just reported whatever they might have heard or a rumor. And they report it, and you hear it on the news, you think it's true. Well, now we have the Lisa Show to show fact for once. You know, it's not emotional. It's not about how people feel. It's about facts.
And we're glad to have you guys here, too. Yeah, I mean, it's really important to have your guys' voices be heard.
Are you guys nervous about the show?
Very.
Be yourself. You'll do good.
Oh, you'll be fine.
Still not nervous?
Very nervous.
Joining us once again.
So how do you feel like the Lisa Show went? Do you think it went well? Or?
I thought it really went well. You could hear people in the background that didn't know anything about the case. You could hear them coming along as they presented stuff. Like the first, when the mothers were out there, there was sort of some skepticism. You could kind of hear them talking. Like no one was sure whether to believe it or not. And then as more and more came out and you guys were talking more, you could hear people starting to get angry.
What was the audience reaction about when they learned that all three defendants had been excluded from making the bite mark?
It's like, match the bite mark, find the killer. I mean, I think everybody got that. It was like, okay, so the kids don't match the bite mark, and I think it sort of sunk in that means that the
kid shouldn't have a bite mark on his face.
Yeah.
He didn't leave home with a big fat bite mark on his face.
If they missed that, what else did they miss? So did you guys see anything in Fire's interview? Like, did you guys notice, like, the conflicting stories? Like, what did you read from that? Did you get anything from that?
No, obviously, he's, I think, is a little mixed up about his felony history.
I noticed Byers wasn't wearing his teeth in the interview.
That's true.
Now, what happened with his teeth, you know?
Well, there's several different versions of what happened. The first version that I heard is he got him knocked out in a fight.
He changed his story. First, a long time ago, he said he got knocked out in a fight, and he told Lisa that he had him surgically removed.
And they told me that he'd taken Tegretol and that they had just kind of rotted out.
Burke and Grove told me last night that something about Byers had left his teeth somewhere, and that's why I didn't have him on during the taping. What was the story on that?
I think the producers of the show said that Byers had told them that he left them in a restaurant somewhere. And so his last parting words to the producers when he was leaving the show, which he had done without his teeth, is, "I'm not leaving L.A. without my teeth."
Test is about to begin. Is this the month of October?
Yes.
Regarding those deaths, do you intend to answer truthfully each question about that?
Yes.
Other than what we've talked about, did you ever wish any person would die?
No.
Did you harm any of those boys?
No.
Other than what we've talked about, did you ever think about hurting anyone?
No.
Did you harm any of those boys found at Robin Hood Hills?
No.
Test is over. Remain seated. Looking straight ahead.
Here's the website. This is how all the people find us. Like, they can come on here and they can read about everything that's been going on.
That's a pretty good synopsis of our involvement and what happened.
We have an individual page for each Damien, Jason, and Jesse. They each have their own page. And then there's different links, like the college fund for Damien, you know, his where it stands right now with him. Oh, that's a really good pick
that's
for Damien.
Good picture, he's looking yeah.
kind of,
oh, man,
kind of dapper. Here's Jason's page. He has some poems that we got. So we have an extra page just for his poetry.
I never dreamed he could write poetry the way he does.
Here's a poem.
An electric charge is in the air, the scent of burning ozone. The deep bass of thunder rumbles. You feel it in your stomach. The wind picks up. The clouds choke up the out the blue skies. The rain pours down, drenching my soul. You are there, and I know I no longer face the storm alone.
Mark, you did another one. You got that arm straightened out and had that
smile.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you, sir.
I don't, according to what we have here, the response is on the chart. I feel you're telling the truth about the issues we worked with as far as you see them. As you see them.
Give me a high five. Thank you. I knew it was right. I knew I was innocent. And to all you morons, fools, and idiots that thought I had anything to do with it, I am now vindicated. Maybe this will serve a point to some of y'all. And I feel sorry. My heart goes out to the victims to have to be put through things such as this. To just already try to clear my name when it's already been vindicated once. Now it's been vindicated twice by a professional who I have the utmost respect for. And I want each and every one of you devil worshipers to know that you are wrong and you need to go on another ghost hunt and leave me alone.
Your call is being connected. Thank you for using MCI.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Come on, speakerphone.
Yes.
Hey, Damien.
Your mom's yes. here?
Yes. Say hi.
Hi, son.
Hello.
How you doing?
Okay, that's fine.
You okay? Too. Yeah, I'm okay. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I miss you.
Miss you too. I don't want to hear any of that either. You know, I know you lie every time you come here, too, whenever you say you're not going to cry on the way home. But then you get out in the parking lot and cry.
Not every time.
Why are you crying?
I miss you.
I miss you, too, but I'm not doing all that.
I love you, baby.
Calm down.
Oh, okay.
Crying. You have exceeded
I'm not
the limit. This call is being
Your call is terminated.
Now that I live alone, I have a lot of time on my hands for my own demise or for my own well-being, whichever I so choose. I so choose for my welfare and my well-being rather than my demise. You might wonder, what do I do with all my spare time? Well, I still enjoy singing, and I took several songs and put them together, went to a studio here in the town I live in, and I recorded a song that meant a lot to me, and it has been a great blessing of faith and hope that has helped me through every day, and there's not a day go by that I don't listen to it or sing it, or at least try to remember part of it. And if you'd like, I'll sing a little of this song for you today. This came after hours of work and $45. And you can have anything made.
Piece of information that surfaces with this case points away from the three guys who are currently serving prison sentences, and one of them's on death row.
If the three defendants ever got out and were released, I would be sick.
I wasn't convinced from the evidence that it was a bite mark, and so ruled.
West Memphis police are never going to admit they botched this up. They're not ever going to admit that they got the wrong people.
I'll watch you, you bastard Damien Nichols, take your last breath, you low-life son of a bitch.
If I were released today, I would kind of want to just blend into obscurity. I wouldn't want to be remembered. You know, I wouldn't want to walk down the street and have someone say, hey, you're that kid that was on death row that they made that documentary about.